Good evening, everyone. I'm Linor Mudu. Welcome to Health Chat. Well, an epidemic of cholera has hit the Democratic Republic of Congo and affected new areas where it has never stricken before in the country's 26 provinces. Zambia is also battling cholera. But observers say the situation there has been contained. Well, the latest cholera outbreak has affected 24 of the 26 provinces beyond Kinshasa and thus in the Democratic Republic of Congo. And the highly infectious disease thrives in an environment of poor sanitation, contaminated food and water. And most people can recover from cholera if treated promptly with oral rehydration salt, but they can die within hours if they are not treated properly. And we will talk about what is happening, especially in Zambia. Observers say things are getting better. What can we learn from what is happening in Zambia and what is the country currently dealing with? This will be our topic today. And to do that, our guest is Batuke Walusiku Mwewa. She is joining us from Lusaka, Zambia, and she is country director for CMMB Zambia. It is the Catholic Medical Mission Board in Zambia. Ms. Walusiku Mwewa, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Leonard, for having me.
It's great to have you. Listen, so cholera outbreak is ongoing currently in several countries in sub-Saharan Africa. You happen to be in one of those countries, which is in Zambia. Can you give us the current situation?
The current situation, as you've just mentioned, Leonard, is that we have managed to contain the epidemic, and currently, as at the latest update that we received for the 28th of January, we had a total of 20 cases, and in some of the times when we had very bad cases, the numbers would go up to more than 60 in a day. So for us to be getting down to 20, with most of the epicenters, the three main epicenters being Kanyama, Chipata, and George compounds, showing very drastic reductions in the new cases. And literally no deaths have happened in the last few days. So we are managing to contain the situation.
Good. That's some good news there. Really something to learn perhaps for other countries. And in this regard, can you tell us what has been done on the ground actively to enable this success, if I may use that term?
That's right. I think, first of all, I'd like to recognize the leadership that has driven the response with regards to this, what we are calling the fight against cholera. First of all, we had our president really taking a leading role, going into the compounds, going to see what was going on and what needs to be done, and then leading his fellow leaders, the ministers, coming up with a multi-sectoral ministerial, inter-ministerial committee, which then involved the various ministries. It was led by Honorable Chitalu, who is our Minister of Health, other ministers from Office of the Vice President, our Minister from Local Government and Housing, the Water and Resources and Natural Resources. The pandemic was the worst in Lusaka district. So we actually also had our Lusaka provincial minister also take part in the process. And all these line ministries, permanent secretaries, directors, we're meeting constantly, providing updates and understanding what the situation was and what the various players needed to do. I must admit that this fight really brought all the different partners together. Mm-hmm. It really showed the power of partnerships. Aside from government, it was private sector, NGOs coming together. As Catholic Medical Mission Board, we also took part, and we had a partner, a private company, Procter & Gamble, donate some 50,000 initially and is giving us another 25,000 to contribute water purifiers to this system. I think that aside from all of this, we had the UN family come in, WHO and the various UN agencies, the various donors, the U.S. government through USAID. And so we had a massive vaccination process, an oral cholera vaccine process happening, to make sure that those who haven't yet contracted cholera reduce their chances of catching cholera. There was a process of going into the communities where the major problem that was discovered was the shallow wells, which were dug very, very close to the pit latrines.
Mm.
And so it was important that we dealt with issues around access to water and safe sanitation, and actually getting to a place where human waste as well as other solid waste is disposed of correctly. So we had a problem where in some areas markets were set up, people would be selling their goods, but there wasn't a place for people to actually go to the toilet.
Okay.
And so we had this situation come up, and everybody has come in to clean up the town, to bury the shallow wells, and ensure that human waste dries up in the pit latrines and so on. So there's a great short-term, medium-term, as well as the long-term interventions that have been set up.
So thanks for this expose. My question is, when we see that in Zambia, and it's not Zambia alone, there are other countries as well, that the issue of cholera, it's really a recurring problem each year.
Mm-hmm.
What is different this year to ensure that next year we don't see the same crisis? What have you observed in terms of the way things were addressed this year around?
This year, we have really looked at what do we do in the short term, what do we do in the medium term, and what do we do in the long term. So once we can deal with long-term issues about providing clean and safe water and ensuring that everybody knows that we have to dispose of our waste correctly in the right places, don't contaminate your drinking water and that sort of thing, purify your water. Once people are more aware of what needs to be done, people are getting immunized. I do believe that we're moving closer and closer towards a more long-term solution. It's about education. It's about people understanding that they have to play their role as well to keep themselves healthy and to keep the next person to them healthy. And it's not just about one person. It's about all of us living within a community and understanding that for us to work together to keep a community healthy, we keep ourselves healthy.
Very interesting. And part of what you're doing is working with these communities, some of these communities in education. Can you tell us about how CMMB is approaching the fight against cholera?
So we realize, as a major partner of government, we cannot ignore when government is having a struggle about something. We also need to play our part. And so CMMB then went out. We have our office in the U.S. that spoke to the private companies that are always our fair weather friends. And then we have Procter & Gamble, which immediately came up and said, we can help out with the water purification process. And we have other programs. We are primarily implementing what we're calling the Children and Mothers Partnership. CMMB is all about reaching out to vulnerable populations. And dealing with issues around water, sanitation, health are really part of what we consider to be our mandate and our mission and vision. And so we felt we're a major partner, and we could not sit back and watch the situation deteriorate. We know that definitely a lot of other partners have come into play, so we can't take the credit for everything, but we felt we needed to at least put in that little effort that could be done from us as a partner of government. And so the water purifiers, 380,000 sachets were contributed, and we are hoping that we can support 5,000 households in Lusaka to have clean water provided to their households for a period of 2 months. And this is just the first phase. The second phase is yet to come. We are currently in the process of procuring the water purifier so that we can continue to be a partner that is meaningful, not only to the government, but also to those that we serve.
You know, the cholera outbreak in Zambia seems to be a bit unusual in the sense that the capital city is very much affected. We've seen in the past, in other countries, perhaps in rural areas or places that were not necessarily very developed. But in this case, why is Lusaka so much affected? Is it the issue with the street vendors? I mean, I know you talked about sanitation and hygiene, but just looking at the big picture, where is the pitfall?
So people come from the rural areas, they come to Lusaka basically looking for a life, you know, and so you have a high level of urbanization in Lusaka. But I do not believe that we built our infrastructure to be able to deal with the numbers, the growing numbers of people that were coming from the rural areas into Lusaka, looking for, you know, economic means to be able to provide for their families and so on and so forth. So you have cholera actually having taken place and starting in October is when we actually had the first cases of cholera in Zambia, which is very, very unusual. And that's how come, as partners, as various stakeholders, we all had to come in and fight it immediately. And so very high number of people, street vending, inadequate access to clean water to drink, while at the same time inadequate places where you could dispose of waste, human or other. And so all of this clogged the system. And so it was important that we took the time out to say, okay, no. Take that step back. And so with the leadership of the Minister of Health put a ban for all street vending, no one to be on to be selling on the street, so that we can then put in place mechanisms that will ensure that there's correct places for markets. Everybody knows when you buy something, you're buying something that is safe. People know where to go to use a bathroom. Markets get certified. Those who are selling food in the market have to get medical certification now to be able to sell food. In this way, we know that we are creating a system that will be long-term enough so that we are making sure that the local Zambian is kept safe. So it was a little bit odd. And yes, but it's about the many number of people and the systems and infrastructure not supporting the high growth of the numbers, especially in our economic zones.
Okay. You see, there are some people that were very critical about some of the interventions, especially when the government deployed the military in some areas to address the issue and also shutting down the street vendors. So I think we lost our guest, but in any case, it was Batuke Walusiku Mwewa. She is country director for CMMB Zambia. She joined us from Lusaka to give us a sense of where things are with addressing the cholera outbreak. And thank you so much for joining us. We will have more on the issue of cholera in a few minutes with our next guest. So don't go away. We will be right back. But first, the news with Imutinyan Abiyeje.
Thank you, Lenore. In a new study conducted in the United Kingdom, researchers say people who smoke even one cigarette a day are still about 50% more likely to develop heart disease and 30% more likely to have a stroke than people who have never smoked. Analysis of 141 studies published in BMJ indicates a 20-a-day habit would cause 7 heart attack or stroke in a group of 100 middle-aged people. But if they drastically cut back to one a day, it would still cause 3 heart attacks. Researchers say men who smoke one cigarette a day had about 48% higher risk of developing coronary heart disease and were 25% more likely to have a stroke than those who had never smoked. For women, it was higher, 57% for heart disease and 31% for stroke. New data for 22 high and low income countries shows antibiotic resistance to a number of various bacteria infection is growing at an alarming rate. The World Health Organization survey, 1.5 million people, will expect bacteria infection between March 2016 and July 2017. The most commonly reported resistant bacteria include E. coli bacteria infection, staph infection, pneumonia, and salmonella. The World Health Organization is encouraging all countries to set up good surveillance system for detecting drug resistance. This, it says, will provide needed information to tackle what it's called one of the world's biggest threats to global public health. If drug resistance is not successfully tackled, experts warn the world could return to the dangerous days before penicillin was invented. And that's our health news for today. Lenore, back to you.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5 minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
What's up, Africa? I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We love to have you on board. This is Upfront on the Voice of America.
Listen, we need to discuss what's going on in your communities, issues that affect you.
Are you involved?
Are you engaged in transforming your society?
Today, right now, this is your platform.
Let us know what you've been up to.
Check us out on Facebook. Drop us a line.
It's Upfront Wednesdays at 17:30 UTC
right here on VOA Africa.
Welcome back. For those of you joining us late tonight, we are discussing the current cholera outbreak in Zambia. And joining us now in the studio is Danielle Resnick. She's Senior Research Fellow with the International Food Policy Research Institute's Development Strategies and Governance Division. Danielle Resnick, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So we had a guest earlier who joined us from Zambia to give us a sense of how things are on the ground. Observers say that the cholera outbreak in Zambia is better, is getting better, mm-hmm. has decreased compared to, for example, the DRC. Mm-hmm. So what is your take on where the country is now? Is it time to relax now? Have they gone through the most difficult part where they can be out of the woods, if I may say that?
Well, I think they've probably are getting out of the woods for this year. And I think they've been assisted quite a lot, as your previous guest said, by the interventions by the international community, particularly the UN community and the WHO. Mm-hmm. I think, as she said, that there's been a recognition that you do need an intersectoral approach to this problem. And the government is to be commended for that. But the country's certainly not out of the woods, and the city in particular, Lusaka, is not out of the woods for the next year. As you mentioned earlier, this is a recurrent issue. Lusaka started facing major outbreaks of cholera in 1990, mm-hmm. and we've largely seen outbreaks, not necessarily of the size we're seeing this year, but you do see it almost every year coinciding with the rainy season. And so the government does need to be a little bit more proactive, not just reactive when a crisis comes mm-hmm. and scrambling to get UN support and creating intersectoral coordination, but be a bit more proactive in planning ahead, even when there's not a crisis there, so that we don't have the same problem next year.
Yeah, because one thing that some people wonder is the fact that this is a recurring issue. Why is it that not only it seems people are not well prepared, and I'm not just pinning this on Zambia, just with some outbreaks we've seen it, recurring issues where countries seem not to be well prepared, and mm-hmm. they seem to be taken by surprise when, you know, you will think that you will know what time it comes and be better prepared. What is happening?
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't mean to imply that nothing goes on the rest of the year. I mean, Zambia does have a national urban sanitation plan that they commenced in 2015. And the Lusaka government, the council, also has a sanitation plan that's supposed to extend to 2030. But improving the sanitation in the water system is very expensive, and it's very long-term system and has to be done in a piecemeal way. So the government has been working with donors to upgrade some of the compounds, not necessarily the ones that where the outbreak is, Kanyama, Chapata, George, and some of the others that your previous guest mentioned. Mm-hmm. But upgrading these to the full extent that they need, I mean, many of these are not connected to any sanitation or sewage system, heavily dependent on the pit latrine system. And so that upgrading would involve substantial displacement and some type of compensation for many of the residents who live there.
Wow, that's it's really look like a comprehensive approach to be able to resolve this problem. Now, one of the last question I asked my guest, unfortunately, we lost her at that point, was the fact that some people have complained about some of the interventions, such as deploying the military. We've also seen that street vendors' businesses have been shut down. Mm-hmm. So, to what extent have these approaches been having a positive impact in decreasing the number of infections?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's hard for me to say, whether the interventions, particularly on the street vendors, has been critical in halting the spread. It certainly might have done that. I think the controversial issue is that the government did use the military, did use the defense force to do this. And it gives the perception, the optics, that street vendors, marketeers are criminals in some way, or that they're enemies in some way. And it gives a perception that they're not citizens who are also disproportionately suffering from the cholera outbreak. And then the other issue is that this has been a recurrent response by various Zambian governments throughout the 2000s. We saw the previous government also 2007-2008 cracking down on street vendors during a cholera epidemic. Mm-hmm. And then the vendors are allowed to come back. The current government has allowed them to really kind of mushroom in the city. And the current president has for quite a while said, do not touch street vendors. Since we don't have formal employment for them, let's let them engage in vending. Mm-hmm. And that's very much been welcomed by many of the poor. But of course, that hasn't come. It's been a benign neglect. Let them trade, but not necessarily provide the services
that they need to support what mm-hmm. they're doing. Well, I guess some people will also say desperate times call for desperate measures. Maybe the government felt that they were at that point where they needed to go with strong measures. I do not know what the reasoning is, and I'm not pretending to speak on their behalf at all. But just trying to see at this point what can be perhaps a long-term solution. And my former guest spoke so well about laying out in terms of short-term, medium-term, and long-term solution, because that's also a very important aspect, given that this is an issue that happens every year. Mm-hmm. What is the solution that could be long-term and sustain a healthy environment that people don't have to go through this again? At least they can be better prepared.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a few different measures, and some your guests already mentioned. The ultimate issue is creating potable, safe potable water, and mm-hmm. also proper disposal of human waste, and also a proper garbage collection, waste collection system, which has been lacking in Lusaka for lack of resources. So, I mean, ultimately, you need those services to be rolled out. I think in the short term, some solutions that are being tried out in Lusaka is one called a toilet tracker. So this is a form of technology that's actually been rolled out in the Kanyama compound, where you can tell how full the pit latrines are and try to alert municipal authorities that it's time to empty these pit latrines before they overflow, and particularly in advance of the rainy season. So, using different forms of ICT to think in advance, what problems may arise and make a cholera outbreak, prevalent. And then I think there needs to be more consideration of how vending fits in this larger picture. Mm-hmm. Your previous guest mentioned intersectoral coordination, but that's mostly been in the health sanitation space. How do you kind of engage more vertically with different levels of government, with the councils, with the provinces, and also with the ministries of trade and commerce that kind of oversee some of the trading activity, and Ministry of Labor. Ultimately, the problem with vending is an employment creation issue, and the problem of getting many street vendors into some of the better service markets is a problem of affordability. Better service markets, obviously, it costs more money to get a stall in those markets, and vendors then prefer not to pay that fee and stay outside where they don't have any types of services. Mm-hmm. So I think finding ways to broaden that coordination around this issue, not just seeing it as a sanitation and health issue, but it actually is a more kind of economic challenge that Lusaka is facing.
I see. So in terms of what is happening in Zambia, and we see that the numbers have gone down, mm-hmm. it's good. good. This is really a good example to look at. What are, can other countries learn from Zambia? What can be replicated with in other cases? For example, with DRC struggling with the outbreak currently, what are the lessons learned from Zambia that can be replicated elsewhere?
Well, I think, you know, perhaps DRC is not always the best example, given that a lot of the cholera outbreak has centered in more conflict areas.
Yes.
But we can think of, you know, some of the other countries, Kenya, Mozambique, Uganda, others that have been affected by the outbreak, not necessarily as urban-based as Lusaka's. But I think the main challenge is, you know, Africa does face this recurrent issue, always concentrated around the rainy season, and it is mostly a service delivery challenge. And this is a good time to be thinking about this issue. We have the World Urban Forum, sponsored by UN Habitat, that's going to launch next month in Kuala Lumpur. And the whole agenda around WASH, the water, sanitation, and hygiene agenda, is going to be top priority there as they think about sustainable development goals around clean water, about decent employment, and about sustainable cities. And I think Zambia could actually perhaps learn some lessons from Kenya, for example, where they've had different successful ways of working with vendors to learn about sanitation practices. Mm-hmm. Doing what some of what your guest says is beginning there is kind of certification techniques, so that vendors can only trade if they've shown that they've gone through some type of formal training in terms of how to safe handling of food, safe packaging of food, hand washing. But ultimately, education's only kind of going to get you so far. You do need the infrastructure, and that is expensive, and it's a long term commitment.
It's a bit really of it's such a complex issue. Yet it seems so basic in mm-hmm. terms of prevention. And so then, when you look at the long term, steps, strategies that. Whether it's Zambia or another country could work with, what do you say should be some of the priorities moving forward?
Well, I think, as I mentioned, I mean, I think priorities for governments can be multiple levels. I mean, I think one is strengthening the capacity of local governments to respond mm-hmm. to these emergencies. So you can have your Lusaka City Council, or you can have your Nairobi government come in and try to respond to these and not have to always rely financially and in terms of human resources on the national government. So there can be a quicker response. Mm-hmm. And that's an issue of decentralization, strengthening local governments. I think secondly, is thinking a little bit more creatively, that we don't just need to be thinking about sanitation in where people live, but we also need to be thinking about where they work. Mm. And that these two can't really be divided, especially if we see contaminated food as being one of the major sources of these cholera outbreaks. And lastly, yeah, as I noted, there needs to be concerted thinking about long-term infrastructure, which in many of these countries has typically focused around road building, irrigation. And I think the WASH agenda is much more difficult because it is in urban areas and Africa is rapidly urbanizing. So, mm-hmm. so dealing with population density and the infrastructure constraints in those areas is going to be, I think, top in many, many donors and governments' minds, certainly after this outbreak.
Definitely. And the other guest touched on that also, how people are coming in the city, but mm-hmm. the infrastructure are not there to welcome them. Now, very quickly, before we wrap, what about the population? What is the role of the people, the average people on the street? What can they do? Because mm-hmm. we talk about what the government should do and everything. Yes, the government has a responsibility, but also mm-hmm. citizens have responsibilities. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So quickly, what can mm-hmm. citizens do?
Well, I think there is an importance in terms of educating people around hygiene practices.
Okay.
And then I think also, proper disposal of waste.
All right.
Which can often just be, you know, thrown to the side of the street.
Okay. All right. We're going to leave it there. That's all the time we have. Thank you so much, Daniel Resnick, for joining us today. And I also thank our guest, Batuke Walusiku Mwewa, who joined us from Zambia. And I thank our listeners for listening in today on Health Chat. I'm your host, Lino Mudo in Washington, with producer Ian Bior and Imutinian with the news. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.
Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight. Coming up,